And welcome to Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. The players have reported to the Giants facility. Paul Dottino alongside me.
Let's go.
We're going to hear a lot of this moving forward. So glad you could spend part of your day with us as we will get into all you need to know now that training camp is well underway. Four players spoke to the media. You'll hear from Justin Pugh in a little bit. Landon Collins, Rashad Jennings, as well as Jason Pierre-Paul also spoke. Paul and I will recap what they had to say with the media. We also want to remind you that Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com and to promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat. Lance Metal, Paul Dottino with you here on Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. All right, Paul. Well, without further ado, let's get right into it. I know you're excited.
Well, I mean, what could be better? It's 90 degrees and sunny outside.
Well, no, it could be better than 90 degrees. I will jump in and say that. It could be maybe a little cooler, all right? At least I could get my
complaint
better.
You see the skin
better.
Here?
Well, you're a little different tone than I am, okay?
I dig the sun. Look, the guys are here. They've checked in. They've gone through the physicals. They've gone to the equipment manager and checked in with all their needs for the equipment, getting their lockers filled up. And in a very short while, at about 3:15 today, they will go through the gassers, the conditioning drills, which they're not open to the media. But I'm sure we'll probably hear about a couple of guys who had some trouble getting to the finish line. It's usually those linemen who maybe ate a little too much during the offseason who struggle at the very, very end. Now, years ago, Lance, when I was doing this back in the yesterday when I had black and white film.
But you don't want to date yourself here.
We used to get to watch those gassers and those conditioning drills, and we used to have a pretty good time, as did a lot of the players amongst themselves.
Good entertainment.
At the guys who were huffing and puffing, and basically their tongues were dragging on the floor as they tried to finish off those final few steps, and there was always a lot of busting going on for those guys who couldn't quite make it to the finish line. But we're not going to be able to talk about that today because we're not going to get a chance to see them. But again, the gassers at 3:15 in the afternoon, by the way, could Coach McAdoo pick the hotter time of the day?
And speaking of McAdoo, he'll be addressing the media a little bit later on this hour, about 12:50 p.m. Eastern to be exact. So we'll hear from him for the first time as he looks to set the tone for the start of training camp. I mentioned off the top, four players spoke to the media. Paul, let's get into that. We'll play a little clip from Justin Pugh, but the three others who spoke, Landon Collins, who represented the defense along with Jason Pierre-Paul. What I found interesting was Collins reflected on last year, his first season in the NFL. First of all, he said, hey, to be able to be out there for 16 games, he started all 16 games at the safety position. That was certainly a big plus. But he mentioned that, you know, looking back, he felt it took about halfway, the midway point of the season.
He said 7 games.
Till the defense started to at least, not necessarily click, but feel comfortable and fully understand Steve Spagnuolo's system.
He talked about not having trust in what they saw. It wasn't so much they weren't trusting the coaches. Obviously, they respect Steve Spagnuolo and all of their coaches. But he said, you know, we weren't seeing things the right way. And finally, after game 7, he said they started to kind of get that down a little bit. But I think that, you know, we had two defensive and two offensive players talk. And I thought that the theme with the two defensive players, JPP and Collins, was as follows. Spags is going to give these guys a little more freedom because he thinks they know the system better and they're more confident in the system and they're more assertive in the system.
Take some more chances.
So they're going to be able to be a little more natural in terms of letting plays flow. I gleaned that from those two guys. I also gleaned from those two guys that they are incredibly excited, without going over the top, about the additions that have been made to this roster. I think they are very excited. Certainly, Collins, when I asked him about the investment that was put into the front seven, he seemed very, very excited about that because, as he said, we couldn't get off the field on third down too many times. The quarterbacks just had too much time to throw. So that's something he's looking forward to that will help the secondary. And then I thought the other thing that JPP said, he is so far beyond what happened last July. That is not only not in his rearview mirror, it's not even on his roadmap anymore. It is done. It is finished. He's not talking about the club. He's not talking about fireworks. He's not talking about being hampered by any inabilities of his hand. He's like, I'm fine. I can do everything I've got to do. I'm ready to play ball. In fact, at one point he even said, my right hand feels as good as my left hand. He is mentally left that behind.
No, I think that's a very good point. And actually, I think the answer to the question that summed that up best, Paul, if you recall, he was asked, how much more effective do you think you could be this season? And his answer was, I already was effective last season. So that, to me, spelled out, all right, you know, he's in the frame of mind where this is what a full off-season program under your belt can do when you're about a year removed from the injury. That was big. The other thing that was interesting from Landon Collins' perspective, Paul, he was asked about, hey, the player opposite you at the safety position right now is up in the air. How much are you going to take that into consideration? How important is it to you for them to solidify that sooner than later? And he flat out said it's important because the trust, which you alluded to earlier, Paul, about the whole defense, he feels that there has to be trust built between himself and the opposite safety before they get into the heart of the season.
Well, quite frankly, nobody asked him about it, but the middle linebacker spot is the heart of that defense and the guy who needs to accumulate the most trust of anybody who's on the field when the other team's got the ball. And is it going to be Jasper Brinkley? Is it going to be Keenan Robinson? Who is going to be the starting middle linebacker on this team who's making those calls? And in Spags' system, it is him, the middle linebacker, and it's Collins at safety unless they give it to Thompson. Those are the two guys responsible for making all the adjustments. So Landon Collins better darn well care about who his middle linebacker is going to be unless they give it to Thompson. They could just say, Darian Thompson, I know you're a rookie, but you got it down. You're going to help make the calls.
Well, and he was
they could do it.
And he was lining up the players in the offseason already, so it's a comfort for him.
I don't think anything – you can't put limitations on Thompson because he's shown right now that he's exceeding all expectations. So anyway – Not to belittle anything that Collins said, but I do think nobody asked him about the middle linebacker spot, and that is the heart of what Spags wants to do. That's the guy who's the brains on the field. That's the guy who's got to relay all the checks.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number, hashtag Giants Chat. He's Paul DeTino. I'm Lance Mann. I want to open up the phone lines, and then in a little bit, we're going to get the offensive perspective. We'll hear from Justin Pugh. We'll give you a little snippet of what he had to say about the outlook for the offense now that we obviously focused on the defense to open the show. But we want to give you an opportunity to weigh in. I'm sure a lot of you are all excited, probably not nearly as excited as Paul DeTino, because that meter is through the roof right now.
Did you see my fireworks on Twitter this morning?
I did. I saw you. Really, you know, I got to give you credit. You think these things through. You get graphics. You get imagery. I mean, you brought your A-game today, Paul.
I'm ready to go.
Yeah. Oh, no doubt about that. Let's see if the callers are ready to go at 201-939-4513. We got Ray in Virginia. He gets us going on Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Ray, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on this morning, fellas?
Doing well,
Ray.
How
you doing?
How's things with you?
Good. I'm really excited. First day of training camp, Big Blue Nation. We about to get this thing rolling.
Absolutely. So what do you have for us?
What I have for you basically is just some positivity starting off for today. You know, going into the season, Paul, you know, I like a lot of the pieces that we put in place. I've expressed that over the times that I've called. You know, as far as going into the training camp and everyone staying healthy, you know, just getting out there. People have to understand. People complain about the offensive line the whole offseason. But as far as just – you know, trying to think like a GM, it absolutely made sense, everything that we did. You know, you could have split the $200-plus million and put some pieces on offense on the line and defense, but I don't think it would have been nearly as powerful as it's about to be with getting the top three, in my eyes, free agents out of defense to add on the defensive side. And then to add to that, the offensive side of the ball, you think about the games, a lot of the games we lost last year, I'm not going to blame one side or the other because it's a team. But as far as the offense is concerned, you know, we scored points. We had no problems. Maybe in situations when we needed to get yards running or something like that. Yeah, I can see that. But we scored points. We scored enough points in a lot of those games last year to win. The Dallas game, we gave it up with you have to stop the teams from scoring. The Saints game, we gave it up. We didn't stop them from scoring. We came back against the Panthers and could have had a chance to go to overtime. You know, we couldn't stop them. So that's the most important thing. I like that they made the emphasis on that. I've been a Giants fan for a long time, maybe not as long as Paul or Lynn from Maryland. But, you know, I've watched us go from quarterbacks like Kent Graham, Dave Brown, running backs like Gerard Bunch. I can't remember the last time we had two cornerbacks that were considered to be shutdown cornerbacks. We have a young team. They got players that were hungry, young, healthy. Let's go.
All right. Appreciate the phone call. Throwing out a lot in terms of the outlook of the roster.
Can we get him a jersey?
He looks like he's ready to hit the wall.
I'm ready.
There you go. And, Ray, appreciate the phone call once again. Justin Pugh, who we're going to play here in a few minutes, did talk about 28 points being that barometer that they're aiming for. And Eli Manning had said that on the NFL Network earlier this offseason, which is what the caller was alluding to. But, you know, there's two sides of things. I think that, as he laid out, Paul, there were opportunities last season where you felt the Giants scored enough, but in the fourth quarter could not make the necessary stops on defense to prevent the opposition from getting into field goal range or getting the go-ahead touchdown. And there were other games where, you know, the defense may have come up with some opportunistic plays, but the offense couldn't take advantage of it.
Well, you know, Pugh's going to refer to it in his conversation with the media, so we're going to play that in a minute. I don't want to talk about specifically what he said, but there's no doubt in my mind that you can set a goal like 28 points, and I think the Giants averaged over 26 a game last year. They were in the top 10 in all the key offensive categories last season. But ultimately, where did they fail? They failed in the red zone, and they failed to control the clock in the fourth quarter when they could have kept the defense off the field. A defense that was hurting, a defense that was missing pieces, that was not fit to shut down people and hold on to leads. And when they had a chance to keep them on the bench, when they had a chance to decide the game with the ball in their hands, the Giants failed to do so. And that's a product of an offensive line that did not run block properly, a running game that did not get the power going downfield like they need to milk that clock and to solidify games so that you can put a master lock on it and tell the defense, don't worry about it, guys. We got this. Have a tub of Gatorade because the game is over.
Well, there are two statistics on offense to me last season that were indicative of perhaps some of their struggles, and you just pointed them out. Third down efficiency and red zone efficiency. Those are the two things on offense that, you know, with a running game, I think the Giants can make a big jump, Paul. They were 22nd in the NFL in third down efficiency, despite the fact that the offensive numbers overall were good, the third down conversion rate. Because remember, you convert on third downs with a running game, Paul, you're going to continue the drive.
Especially in second halves.
Absolutely. And then red zone, obviously capitalizing, 29th they were tied for in the NFL in terms of their ranking in red zone efficiency.
Well, remember, Josh Brown made over 30 field goals last year. I think he'd like to get that down to about 24, 25.
He'd like to stick to the extra points this season.
You know, when your kicker's making 35 field goals, now unless you're just scoring so many points that you get a ton of touchdowns and field goals, that's a little different. But too many times, he had to come out and settle for the points.
He was one of the biggest scorers last season. You don't want that to necessarily happen, especially with all the weapons. All right, let's head back to the lines here. We got Jarrell in Charlotte. Jarrell, what's happening?
Hey, Paul, I just want to congratulate you on being on the NFL channel. You're the only one that gives the Giants credit where they do. I appreciate seeing you on there. Look good. I hope you look there more often.
Well, thanks, man.
The commentators that, you know, old players, they try to forget where they come from.
Well, Jarrell, let me just say one thing to you, okay? When the NFL Network has me on, and I've been very blessed to be part of what they do, that's not to come on and paint the blue picture for all you Giants fans out there. What they want is somebody who's going to be in the know and who's going to give you the truth as much as they possibly can. Because there are a lot of people out there around the country who have preconceived notions about a team that hasn't made the playoffs 4 years in a row. And it's easy to pile on. It's easy to be quick to criticize. I'm just trying to tell people, hey, I'm here all the time. I see what's going on. And I'm trying to give them the truth. And that's all it comes down to. But I appreciate your compliments. Thank you.
Okay. And y'all made me change my question when you were talking so much about the the red zone, green zone. I think that I love Coughlin, you know, but now that Coughlin's gone, I think the gloves can be off, and McAdoo, we can do more things that Coughlin was hesitant about.
Well, Jarrell, keep in mind, and listen, we're not here to say that, you know, previous regimes didn't necessarily fulfill their obligations, but, you know, Ben McAdoo was the offensive coordinator under Tom Coughlin. It's not as if, you know, McAdoo's voice and his presence hasn't been felt on offense in the 2 years that he's been here prior to taking over as head coach. So I'm not saying that there's not going to be improvement this season, but to say that all of a sudden they're going to completely flip the script and there's going to be all types of new things, let's not forget, McAdoo has had his imprint on this offense the last 2 years.
And by the way, the offense has been so successful the last 2 years. Do you really want them to change very much?
You want to see the effectiveness go up a little bit, but you're right.
Everything will open up more with Cruz, Shepard, and Beckham that they just can't line up, you know, for the run. I think the run will be more efficient. Definitely inside the green zone.
Well, that's certainly part of the goal. I think the more weapons you have on the field, and Jarrell, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in, that you hope that that opens up the running game, because now if hopefully Cruz is healthy and ready to go, Beckham's on the field, Sterling Shepard, depending on what they get from the tight ends, defense is going to have to adjust accordingly, Paul, where they can't just focus solely on those guys. They then have to worry about everybody.
I'm going to make this very simple. The Giants have not had a tight end who can block as well as Will Johnson, who they just signed from the Steelers this offseason, since Jeremy Shockey. Now, Jeremy Shockey didn't like to block very much, but you know what? He was pretty darn good at it. And they haven't had a guy who was that good at blocking from that position since then. I think Will Johnson is going to be an unsung hero on this offense. And when you start seeing them, if they can get that running game going, especially to the outside and to the right side, keep an eye on Will Johnson as you're watching these games, especially on the replays. He gets hats on people.
Well, I brought this up at the tail end of last season, Paul, and I don't think it's necessarily a fluky situation. When Nikita Whitlock was utilized a little bit more on the offensive side as the fullback last year in that Will Johnson type of role, which you're touching on, it seemed as if that coincided with a more consistent running game, because that really happened in the last four games of the season.
Well, even Justin Pugh would admit the five offensive linemen did not run block well enough. They needed some help. And if it's got to come from a fullback, an H-back, or a tight end, it's got to come from somewhere, because those five guys, as a unit, were not as effective run blocking as they needed to be. And so Will Johnson is here, and he's going to help these guys out.
Let's head back to the phone lines. Max is in New York City. Max, what's happening?
What's up, guys? How are we?
Hi.
Doing well, Max. How's things with you?
Hey, I was just wondering, where do you think this team ranks as far as, like, the division goes? Because I feel like everyone tries to put a team in perspective of the NFL. But I don't know. I feel like you never should rank your team and incorporate it to the rest of the NFL, because it doesn't matter. Because in my opinion, you just have to you have to win your division. And once you're in the playoffs, anything can happen.
Great comment, because every Giants coach that I've ever known, starting with Bill Parcells, has always said, we've got to win our division, because when you win your division, you clinch a playoff spot, and that's what it's all about. You don't have to worry about scoreboard watching for a wild card.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I don't know. I just think that, like, I think that this Giants team is as talented as any other team. I think Dallas is going to struggle, because I just don't think that they're going to have their base of guys on the field long enough together with the suspensions and, you know, the inevitable injuries. And I think Philly might be one of the less. I was doing a power ranking thing the other day. I had Philly pretty low. They were one of the fewer lower teams in the league, as far as I looked. And, you know, I think Washington will be good, but, you know, you never know how Kirk's going to bounce back. But I think this Giants team has a real chance.
No, I don't think that's a stretch at all. As I've said, I think this division is fairly wide open. You know, I think you brought up some interesting points, Max, about some of the other teams. The Cowboys have question marks on defense as they head into the season. They lost both of their defensive ends for at least four games a pop and their middle linebacker, Rolando McClain. The Eagles, I just feel like the Eagles are an easy overlook type of team. I would not overlook, though, their defense. I think that their offense has some question marks, Paul, but defensively, and you and I have talked about this before, with Jim Schwartz coming over as defensive coordinator and some of the pieces they carry over from last year, there is some substance there that perhaps can make some noise.
They probably have the most talent on the defensive side of the ball going in of all the teams in the NFC East. So I agree with you there, Lance, and we have talked about this. But I think right now, if Philly, Washington, and the Giants win the division, I'm not surprised. Dallas, to me, is the only one that I just don't see winning the East, because I do think that their defense leaves a lot to be desired. The guys who are missing, the guys who are hurt, I know what they're going to try to do. They're going to try to run the ball 45 times a game like they did with DeMarco Murray a couple of years ago.
Get the D off the field.
And see if that formula can work again. That's lightning in a bottle. It worked once. It will not work again. Dallas is not winning this division. Now, you know, the other three, they've all got a shot. I would still say I'm going to give a very, very, very small edge to the Washington Redskins. Yeah. They're the defending
That's
champions.
Fair.
And until Kirk Cousins proves that he can be a pumpkin again, you know, as long as he's Cinderella like he was last year, you got to be wary of them. I don't think he's going to be quite that good. I can't see how. But right now, I'm going to give a small edge to Washington.
Well, he's surrounded by a lot of talent on offense.
Those receivers.
Correct.
And Reed at tight end.
The running game is still questionable because they have some young guys that they're going to turn to, and ball security has been an issue. And as far as their defense is concerned, which doesn't get a lot of talk, by the
good
way,
enough.
Junior Gallette again out for the season.
Yes.
But remember, he missed all of last
That's
year,
correct.
So they've been playing without him. It's a bad loss, don't get me wrong, but to say that it's all of a sudden going to change the dynamics in the landscape of the division, I wouldn't go so far because he didn't even suit up
right.
last season. And here's the other thing that I think gets lost in translation with respect to the Redskins. Joe Barry, who's their defense coordinator, Paul, he took over last year. So, like other defenses,
like
this
Spags.
Is year two with Spags. They could all of a sudden take a step forward. I think it's good a good parallel with the Giants. Just like the Giants, I think, can transition and go up a notch because the language, the jargon, the players are a little bit more comfortable within
yeah.
this game.
Yeah.
And, Max, appreciate the phone call. I think it's a good question. Everybody does like to rank teams, but, you know, we got to be a little bit careful because this is the time period, unfortunately, knock on wood, not that we're wishing anybody ill, but, you know, players you can lose here or there during the course of training.
And
camp.
Let's not kid ourselves. The last two games of the Giants' regular season schedule, guess what? Washington and Philadelphia. Okay? These are the three teams that I think are going to be fighting it out for the NFC East. And boy, oh boy, oh boy, Washington's the finale. Philly the week before. That's going to be one heck of a way to end the season.
It's been coming down to the nitty-gritty each and every season for the most part. And the stat that I love to throw out, just to show you why you can't take for granted that you won the division the previous year. The NFC East hasn't mm-hmm. had a team win back-to-back division titles, Paul, since the Eagles won four in a row in the early 2000s.
That's amazing.
It's been that long.
It's amazing.
So that's why if you want to make a case for the Giants, it's not a stretch. You want to make a case for the Cowboys. You want to make a case for the Eagles. You want to make a case for the Redskins.
No, no,
I'll give it to
don't,
you.
No, don't be making a case for Dallas. They're not winning this division.
Well, I'm just saying I think it's still very open for just about everybody at this point. And, you know, the other thing I will say, I think the Cowboys have a lot of question marks on defense, and they're going to have to find some other ways to get a pass rush. But how many times have we seen, Paul, in the NFL, the team that you count out immediately off the top, they surprise you a little. That's why I'm not – it's too early to dismiss it.
But, Lance, I will say this. I will say this. A team that does not have a pass rush, and they have none.
They don't.
I mean,
yeah, they
there's
lost two
nobody.
Of their guys.
There's nobody on that Dallas front now that's going to get to the quarterback. And there's one thing we know about this league now. Not 1970, but now, 2016. It is a passer's league. No matter how much I still want to run the ball, and I still think that teams have to be somewhat balanced if they're going to succeed, my God, if you don't get to the quarterback, we know, we saw with the Giants last year, you have no chance to be a playoff team.
Well, and if you go back to last season, I think you hit on an interesting point, Paul. I was looking over the numbers recently. The team that won the division last year was one of the top two teams in the division in sacks. It was the Redskins and the Eagles who were neck and neck, 38 and 37 sacks. The Giants and the Cowboys were a little bit further behind. So the teams that obviously got to the quarterback more consistently, no surprise, were in the hunt to win the division.
What does Anita always say? You got to cut off the head of the snake.
Got to get to the quarterback. Helps your secondary, does wonders for the rest of your defense. No doubt about that. Let's head back to the phone lines here as we move along on Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We got Mike in New Jersey. Mike, what's happening?
How are you guys? You guys do a great job. I always listen to you, and I appreciate all that. Hey,
appreciate
a couple quick points for just some comments from you guys. And I've heard actually each of you comment on this, and that is, you know, what to expect from maybe some upgrade and some second-year players in the system. And where we can see some improvement off of last year. And I think there's a couple of names and people that just are flying a little bit under the radar that you wouldn't really think about. So some of the ones you both have brought up, Landon Collins, I think, comes to mind. Owa, you know, comes to mind as someone that I think you could see a big step up. Maybe Kennard, even, if he can stay healthy. But even when you look at the line, as much as the right side, which I think is a little overblown, is a concern, you know, this is Weston Richburg's second year going as a center. It's Justin Pugh's second year as a full-time left guard. Obviously, it's Eric Flowers' second year as a left tackle. And you think about the three of them going into their second year, familiarity, even Pugh put on some more weight. You know, Richburg is, I think, you know, an underrated. I think he's beginning to get some recognition because his year last year was phenomenal. But then you even go into other people like Dwayne Harris, you know, second year in the system. I mean, there's guys littered. Will Tye, you know, last year, I mean, you know, this guy could play a major role if he's not the starting tight end. You know, second year, he's going to be going into his second year. And a lot of times second and third year players, you both know, you can see a big step up in terms of familiarity in the system, workouts, training, the whole nine yards. And I think that's where a lot of the step up across the board is going to be. And then the other point is just for you guys to comment on is the D-line itself. Ironically, I think we talk a lot about the pass rush, which is great, and I like having two edge rushers. I think putting JPP on the other side of the line and now going up against right tackles, for instance, the first, you know, game of the season, I think you're going to see him, you know, have a really productive day. He's not going up against, you know, one of the best left tackles in the league. Ironically, I think, you know, both of the DNs are very good against the run. I think that gets underplayed. And I think Snacks Harrison in particular, I think he's going to get more opportunities actually to rush the passer. And I think he's going to be pretty effective because the one thing a quarterback doesn't want is somebody right up in his face, and I think he's going to demand that. So I'd just like to hear you guys comment on both those things.
All right, Mike. Appreciate the phone call.
I would only add this very quickly, Mike. I think everybody who's putting their eggs in the baskets of Vernon and JPP, assuming that because the bookends are there, you're going to get a ton of sacks, that's a mistake, okay? I'm telling you right now, offensive coordinators can deal with your defense if there's only those two guys applying the heat. There are going to have to be others. Devon Kennard blitzing off the edge as a third option. Odighizuwa as a rotating third defensive end is going to have
or
to provide heat.
Or even a defensive tackle if they move him inside.
If they do that in the NASCAR package, or the sub package, whatever you want to call it. You have to have multiple threats who can get to the quarterback. Now, one or two big guns, absolutely. That's what you want, one or two big guns. But you have to have two or three other guys who on a given play, when your defense decides to sell out and send those guys, they got to be able to get home. Because if they achieve and gain the respect of the offense and the offensive coordinator on the other side of the field, that gets them thinking now. That gets them worried. What are you going to do? It gets them changing their plays. It gets them audibilizing out. It gets them trying to compensate because, uh-oh, we think Kennard's coming on this third down. All of a sudden now that running back, instead of flaring out, he's staying in the chip. Makes things as a defensive coordinator a lot easier. So please, don't for a second think that Vernon and JPP are automatically combined for 25 sacks and the Giants are fine. Here's the number. They need 42 sacks, okay?
As a team, you're talking.
As a team. They need 42 sacks as a team, in my mind, to be indicative of a true playoff defense. 25 sacks out of those two guys? That'd be great if they get it. Where's the other 17 coming from?
Well, that's the bigger question and the more intriguing conversation. What is Double O going to do after missing the majority of last season? A guy like Kennard, can you get a little bit more pass
couple years
rush
ago,
out of
Hankins
him?
Had seven.
Yeah, Hankins, too. Is he going to bounce back after having none last year plus the injury? So, you know, that's a big looming question. I think what the last caller touched on, Mike, which was interesting, he wasn't necessarily focusing on and assuming that the two bookends are going to give you X amount of sacks. What he pointed out, and I agree with him here, but I think that there's an important caveat to throw out, the fact that Vernon and JPP are underrated, do not get enough credit for stopping the run during the course of their careers. I think that's fair to say.
Yes.
The problem is, Paul, when JPP came back last year, he wasn't the JPP that we're used to seeing who stops the run because of obviously some physical limitations.
Yes.
Nobody's faulting him for that. Can JPP get back to that consistent run stopper this season? That, I think, is still a question mark, Paul. It's safe to say he's solid against the run, but he still needs to prove that he can get back there.
Well, he used to be an impact player. Right now, he's just a guy who showed he could help the defense.
Yeah.
That's not good enough. He needs to be an impact player again to be JPP.
Which is why, going back to Mike's point, I don't think you could come into the season assuming that, okay, our bookends are definitely consistently going to stop the run, because he did bring up an interesting point. Okay, hey, if those two are stopping the run, Paul, consistently, JPP and Vernon, if we can rely on the two of them, if Spags can dial it up and say, these guys are going to be our protectors, then you can be creative and give Snacks an opportunity and Hankins to get after the quarterback a little bit more, but that's under the assumption that Vernon and JPP are giving you consistent run-stopping ability.
Well, we saw at the end of last season that Jason was getting a lot of pressures, and in fact, 6 weeks in a row, Robert Ayers got sacks,
yeah,
and a lot of that was because Jason was chasing guys into Robert Ayers' arms. Not to take anything away from Robert Ayers, who had a good season, but
he benefited from his presence.
Clearly,
there's no doubt about that.
So, is JPP going to help Hankins and Harrison?
Meaning bring those guys in for,
yeah,
sacks, is what you're saying. And run stopping, too, I should say.
If JPP only gets 8 sacks this year, let's say he doesn't make double digits. Let's say he just gets 8 sacks, but he has a ton of pressures and winds up feeding sacks to where Harrison has 5 and Hankins has 8. That's good. That's good.
Yeah.
You'll take that.
Absolutely, you'll take that. Listen, he's just helping the cause, and they're going to spread the wealth. At the end of the day, like you said, Paul, they want 42 sacks, or at least that's your ballpark number.
My number.
It doesn't matter whether JPP gets 5 of them, whether, you know, Hankins gets 7 of them. The bottom line is you want a good accumulation, and it's better off if they actually spread it amongst everybody, because then, like you said, now the offense has to think about, okay, we can't just go this direction because this guy's just been as effective as somebody else on the other side of the line.
And if you want to be optimistic, we know that 2 years ago, in the final month and a half of the season, Kennard had 4.5. Remember when he had that breakout stretch as
late,
a rookie?
Late in the season.
He had 4.5 in a month and a half.
The Tennessee game was like his coming out party, from what
he
I recall.
He was a monster.
Yeah.
Hankins had 7 2 years ago. So these guys have proven that they can get home. They can get there. Now the question is, are they going to do it this year at the same time?
Now, on that point about finding other ways to get pressure, sacks, and so forth, and this was also, I thought, what the last caller, Mike, had hit on when he was talking about maybe some of the X factors. You know, we talk about the safeties, we've talked about the defensive ends, and even Kennard at the linebacker spot. You know, what about getting some additional pressure from the cornerback position too, Paul? Because, you know, Spags has dialed that up in the past. It'll be interesting to see if that's an area that we don't necessarily always rely on every year.
He's not big on corner blitzes. Spags likes safety blitzes.
Well, depending on if some of the safeties line up in the slot, though, which
now,
I think we could potentially see.
Well, now, here's the problem when you do that, though. Now you better have darn good one-on-one man-to-man coverage down the backfield.
Yeah.
And the Giants, to this point, hadn't proven to Spags last season that they could do that.
But
so,
I'm saying now with the current grouping.
Maybe. We don't know.
Of course, it's a question, but I think that you feel as if maybe you have some personnel that could equate
it
to that.
It could be a way to go. Now, it's risky to do, but if you've got the guys who can prove to Spags they can cover, well, then he certainly will work that into the repertoire.
Let's head back to the phone lines. Lance Metal, Paul DeTino with you here on Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. The players have reported. A number of them spoke to the media in a little bit. We'll play you a section of Justin Pugh's back and forth with the media, but we want to obviously hear from you. Pete is in Washington Heights. Pete, what's happening?
How you doing, guys? Thanks a lot for taking
Hi.
The call.
Well, thanks for making it.
I just wanted to touch on Jerry Reese and how I feel that, to a degree, he's a victim of his own success. I see that Ernie, of course, he's going to be inducted in the Ring of Honor, and I think that's absolutely appropriate. But I don't think people, and particularly some folks in the media, really appreciate that Jerry Reese was basically his Tom Boyster, starting in 2003, and that's how he got the general manager position. And then after that, he kept, you know, that winning team together that he helped to build to win a second championship. And this is another cycle, and has he missed? He's absolutely missed at times with draft picks. But I think in this recent cycle, maybe one of the reasons they had so much money is because he spent money holding on to the team that won a second championship. Also, this year's draft pick, I just have to say that I know we heard a lot about Leonard Floyd and that the reason the Giants liked him is because Jerry Reese went to his pro day, but that's part of the evaluation process. Maybe Jerry Reese went to the pro day and saw a guy who's going to be 24 at the beginning of the year, who can't keep weight on, and decided he wasn't going to give up other draft picks to get this guy, and he'd rather have a guy who's going to be 21 in September and has a lot of growth potential. Thanks a lot, guys.
I appreciate the phone call, Pete. Thanks so much for chiming in. First of all, on the topic of the tree that the last caller was talking about, John Schmelk and I recently had an opportunity to speak with Ernie Accorsi, and one of the questions that we asked him was about grooming Jerry Reese and also grooming Dave Gettleman because of what Gettleman has gone on to do in Carolina. I think it'd be interesting. I don't want to speak for Ernie, but if you have an opportunity, it's up on Giants.com. I'd listen to that answer, which I think provides a little bit more insight on how the Giants structure their organization and, you know, who's responsible for what and how he groomed them, as opposed to perhaps running away with assumptions that this guy did all the work and this guy sat back and watched. I think listening it from Ernie's perspective perhaps will shed a little bit more light on the inner workings of that tree and so forth. That, I think, is important to note. As far as, you know, the recent draft history and perhaps the direction of the team this year, I think that there has been a goal in mind, if you look at the last few drafts, Paul, in terms of trying to rebuild this offensive line, because prior to this year, they had been investing first and second round picks in linemen, similar to what they had done back in the day between undrafted guys and veteran free agents to get a nucleus together that they can use moving forward. There was a period of time where it was phasing out the old regime, Paul, and slowly bringing in the new regime. Now they're at the point, and I don't want to give away what Justin Pugh's going to have to say. We'll play that in a little bit, but that was one of the things he touched on, Paul, when he spoke to the media, how Pugh says it's a completely different room now from when I first walked in when I was a rookie.
And he's still pretty young.
Yeah, which says a lot right now.
I think that he and Weston Richburg in particular have become the big brothers in the offensive line room, and that's a really good thing because specifically, those two guys have been around the David Deals and the Chris Snees and even Sean O'Hara, who comes back a lot here to be doing broadcasting stuff.
Yeah,
they've seen a lot of the examples that were set by Super Bowl linemen for this Giants organization in the past. And so they should be the guys, in my mind, to take this thing by the throat and to tell these other young offensive linemen, to tell the Eric Flowers of the world and the Bobby Harts of the world and the John Jerrys of the world who hasn't won a Super Bowl ring. This is what we were shown by guys who have the hardware. This is how we got to do it, okay? They showed us the blueprint. We got to follow this thing. So I'm thrilled. I know from the very beginning when Pugh and Richburg were drafted, there were some eyes looking at him like, could they be those kinds of guys? It looks like they've developed into those kinds of guys.
We got Bill on the line in Phoenix. Bill, what's happening?
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Well, hi. Thanks for making it, Bill.
I just wanted to make a comment on you guys mentioned the game in Washington and Philadelphia being our last two games.
Yeah, the regular season.
But last year I watched the Washington game, and it was a must-win game at the time. And what I noticed that the linebacker and defensive end for Washington was more, I forgot his name, but he was more or less a star of the defense, and we couldn't do anything all game because of this guy's getting sacks and tackles.
Well, Ryan Kerrigan has done a lot of things to a lot of people over the last few years. He's a pretty good player.
Right. But that's what I'm saying, that we can't underestimate the value of a right tackle, because when it comes to a must-win game, these teams are getting their best player on the team's worst player. It's a matchup. And even in the Super Bowl, we had that what's his name? The guy that had the great game, the linebacker.
For the Giants? Who are we talking about?
No, we're talking about Denver.
Oh, Von Miller you're talking about, maybe.
Von Miller.
Von Miller. Yeah.
Now, he had a great game, but he's playing against an average right tackle. And I think if they had a do-over, you know, maybe that score could have changed if they had an all-pro tackle. Or maybe our score could have changed if we have an all-pro tackle. But it seems a lot of times in these games that these defensive ends and these linebackers are the star of the game because they're going against average players, and people think it's good enough, but when it really isn't.
Well, I think, you know, a lot depends on how teams are built. You use Carolina as an example. If you go back to last year's stats, Bill, Carolina had the best rushing attack in the NFL last year. Now, how your offensive line run blocks could be very different than how your run game, how your pass protection plays out. And, you know, Carolina had some issues in terms of pass protection, which was brought to the forefront against Denver. But to say that they didn't have a good right tackle, I think, is a little misleading, because they did run the ball very effectively, and they ran the ball effectively, whether it be on the left side or the right side, depending on the different equations that played out.
But I'm just saying, if they had like an upgrade, a good pass blocking right tackle.
Well,
you know,
I think
somebody like that,
Bill,
that
everyone's,
it really affects the game more than people realize.
Well, and I don't disagree with you there, Bill. I think that every team's goal is to have versatility in your tackles, that they're able to run block and they're able to pass protect. But the problem is, based on how the market conditions play out, it's not easy to bring in all pro talent on both sides because of the economics and the salary cap. You have to at least take that into consideration.
Bill, I would only add one thing, and I got to run and go listen to Coach McAdoo in just a minute, so I'm going to head out and leave it to Lance. But I would add one thing to you. Every coach, every coach that I've been around in my 34 years now of doing this has always said to me, first things first, about what we do. It's about what we can do efficiently and what we can do to the other team. How can we impose our will on them? How can we dictate to them what we want to do? Then after that, you worry about, okay, what can we take away from them? But look, it goes back to what Lombardi used to do with the Packers in the 60s. Lombardi always felt, if we know what we do really well, and we just continue to do it well time after time after time, we will control the game and we will win the game more often than not. It's not about the other guy. It's about how good and how efficient and how can we execute. Lombardi used to run that power sweep all the time, and everybody in the stadium knew it was coming, but his guys executed. And that's the core of what hardcore old school football is.
Hey, Paul, thank you. And as usual, you have done a great job with that insider information. It just amazes me how you could just break things down like that. And I really appreciate you guys. Okay, thanks for my call. Okay?
All right, Bill.
Thank you.
Appreciate the phone
call.
Thanks so much for chiming in. You know, the other thing also, just to put things in perspective here, Denver had a multifaceted defense with a lot of different pass rushers. He brought up Von Miller, but remember, they had Danny Trevathan, they had Brandon Marshall, they had DeMarcus
Ware.
They were
good.
Yeah, I mean, so even if you had an all-pro right tackle,
good.
I guess my point is, they had ways to even make all-pros start to second-guess their talent, because Von Miller was giving everybody a headache all last season. It wasn't just the Carolina offense.
Yeah, there's no doubt, but the other bottom line, and I will never, ever, ever vary from this. The game still starts in the trenches.
No
and
doubt.
It always will. Maybe, you know, Xbox people don't believe that. They want to just wing the ball around like it's arena football. Well, please, by all means, go buy your tickets to arena football and enjoy watching arena football. All right? I like arena football, too. I watch it. It's fun. But it's not real football. It's a mutant. It is a mutation. It is... It is a knockoff. When you're talking about the National Football League, the greatest game known to mankind, the greatest game that this planet has ever seen, okay, the greatest chess match of all time, it will start in the trenches. It always has, and it always will.
That's where you set the tone, and that's also, just use the Giants as an example. That's where the Giants have thrived when they've won Super Bowls. All right, well, I know
Ben
McAdoo, yes, is going to talk momentarily, so we are going to bid farewell to Paul DeTino for the time being. We will continue to take you up till the top of the hour. We'll get in a remainder of your phone calls at 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants chat as well. What I want to do, though, before we get to the phone calls, as I mentioned, there were a number of players that spoke to the media. We want to give you just a little snippet. We focused on the defensive side right off the top of the show, talking about what Landon Collins and JPP had to say. Rashad Jennings and Justin Pugh also spoke to the media. Let's just listen to Justin Pugh here briefly, then we'll return. We'll get back to your phone calls at 201-939-4513. Here's Justin Pugh earlier today coming back for the start of training camp, speaking to the media.
No, I love Coach Mack. He's awesome, man. I was probably one of the closest guys with him last year as offense coordinator. So having that relationship with him and now having him as head coach, I feel like the offense knows him pretty well. The defense obviously is getting to know him more and more as we go along and throughout the OTAs. But I feel like the offensive unit knows him fairly well.
Do you think this offense could be dynamic?
Of course. I mean, I think we showed flashes last year. We just got to make sure we run the ball more consistently. I think that's the biggest thing going into this year. Run the ball more consistently will help us on third downs, which we struggled in last year, and help us in the green zone, where we also struggled last year. And I know like the coaches have said that and harped on that, and I think that's something that will help us out tremendously if we get that going. And also, you got Victor Cruz coming back. Some of the younger wide receivers that are coming up look very good. So having those guys definitely help us out in those areas as well.
Eli had mentioned 28 points a game as a goal. Has he discussed that with you at all? Is that something you guys?
Yeah, we always set barometers for our offense in the beginning of the year, and that's always is to be in the top five in the NFL. You want to score a certain amount of points a game, and 28 points is where we're looking to be at. And I know we were pretty close last year. So I think if we get to that point, we would have won some more games last year too. So that's definitely our goal. Obviously, like I said, we lacked on third down and green zone last year and running the ball a little bit better. So those are some other things that, we've got to focus on as well.
You talked about running the ball. You guys have had a lot of time to think about it in retrospect. Why do you think it took so long last year to kind of get that going?
Well, there's definitely a lot of variables that go into it. Obviously, you're playing against some good defenses. We're trying to learn how we work. With the backs trying to learn how we work. There was a lot of things coming together. And I think towards the end of the year, we really showed what we could do. And I think we got to pick up where we left off with that. And I think we're going to do some good things this year.
A lot of guys were getting carried last year. What are the pluses and minuses of having different backs?
It changes up what the defense is prepared for. You know, you have one back, that can run with power. You have another back that can run, a little more elusively. So it definitely has its pluses and minuses. Obviously, those backs have to get a feel for us. So it took a little while for that to get going. But I'm excited. We got those guys coming back. They're in great shape. The offensive line is excited. I think Coach Solari has done a great job with working with us, the offensive line unit, and really getting us ready to keep us on the same page. It's black and white. If we get this look, we're doing this. So it's something that I definitely am looking forward to.
Justin, you've worked physically. You're obviously comfortable with the offense, the playbook. How do you guys learn how to close out games and win them at the end? That was something that's been a problem for the last couple of years. You've addressed that throughout those losses. How do you figure out how to do that?
Learning from those games first and foremost, but I also said that after Dallas week one last year. We got to learn from this and we can't let it happen again and happen again. So it's something to, I think last season was the theme of the last year. At the end of the game, there was always something would go bad and we were losing games in the last, minute and a half. So that's something that we have to build off of this year and make sure we're finishing games. So we've done stuff in practice where, we hop into a 2-minute drill and we got to end the game, or a 4-minute drill. And I think, like I said, keep going back to running the ball. We run the ball better. We can eat up clock towards the end of games. That's what's going to, close out games. And I think our defense is definitely looking forward to getting out there and shutting some people down. I mean, we got some scary pass rushers out there, and our D-line's looking pretty good. And also with those cornerbacks, I don't know. We'll see what happens when they put the pads on, but I'm excited to see what they do.
So that was Justin Pugh earlier today speaking to the media. And one of the last things he said when he was talking about the defensive line, it's important to note, and this I think also can easily be overlooked, what practice can do to help improve this team by bolstering the defensive line in the offseason, just think about the matchups that are going to take place all throughout training camp as well as, you know, every single day during the week leading up to games, where the offensive line is going to be tested in practice every day, and that will only help, hopefully, this unit improve as they take that into games every week. And then he also alluded to, obviously, the running game. And we heard Rashad Jennings earlier as well talking about how, you know, they plan on having a consistent running game this season. That is the goal. As opposed to last year when it was really the last quarter of the season where all of a sudden everything seemed to click and Jennings was by far the most productive back and they showed continuity and consistency every single game. They want to be able to do that for the 12 other games over the course of the season. And if they're able to do that, you figure you're going to face more favorable third downs. You'll have more options in red zone plays. So that's going to help your offense on many different fronts. So that's exactly the game plan heading into training camp that they want to work on, and how that plays out remains to be seen. But, you know, clearly priority number one is to get a consistent running game this season on top of, obviously, you know, getting more unity within this offensive line. But that's going to come with the way the offensive line performs as well as how this running game, this running back group, comes to fruition over the course of training camp in terms of some of the young guys that they brought in as well as some of the veterans. They got a nice mix. And I've said this all throughout the offseason, one of the best positions to watch throughout the course of training camp is going to be the running backs, because you have so many jobs that are up for grabs at this point, especially on the back end, so many roles up for grabs, and there's going to be somebody that's not going to make this 53 who has experience under their belt. And you can't say that for every single team when you look across the league how many guys they have fighting for jobs. The Giants have a plethora of options, and that's only going to bode well for the amount of competition that we assume we're going to see during the course of training camp. All right, let's reopen the phone lines as we take you up to the top of the hour here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Lance Meadow with you, 201-939-4513. Charlie is in Portland, Maine. Charlie, what's happening?
Hey, Lance. Thanks for having me to co-host with you.
Yes,
Paul,
oh, no problem. Absolutely.
I appreciate
well,
that.
It's a pleasure to have you host and take over alongside me. I can't tell you that.
Hey, it's easy for Pugh to be confident about the O-line when he's not playing next to Jerry or Newhouse. So, you know, he's on the better side of the line. And, you know, we do have a lot of running backs. We got some depth. But if you look, again, at our O-line, we don't have depth. Just go through the roster. There is no depth there. So I just don't see how we're going to run the ball any different than we did last year with the same players. I know we got a new coach. I know they're going to have work together another year, but I just don't see how that's going to make them a better offensive line from, you know, fair to really good. We might go to better than fair, maybe a little good, but I don't see how it's going to change anything. Because the thing is, just like Pugh was saying, they made changes on the D-line, big changes. It has changed that line. We've got better players, but we didn't do that on the O-line. So we got the same players we had last year, and what we're hoping for is that somehow they're all going to just improve from 1 year. And I just don't see them making that big step. I think we're not going to bring in Davis or bring in somebody else. I just don't think that's going to happen because he should have been there today or at least tomorrow. So anyway, that's my take on the O-line. You've heard it 100 times.
Well, I've heard it, but the one thing I will throw out, Charlie, is, you know, while I understand maybe, you know, you're not jumping up for joy right now, but what you have to do, you have to take into consideration the fact that, you know, last year was the first time that, you know, this group played together. Eric Flowers was a rookie. Pugh moved back to left guard. You know, Richburg took over as the true starting center. So I don't think it's a stretch to say, okay, with 1 year under their belt, now the same five come back, that perhaps they take a step forward. I don't think that's a stretch. Are we talking about, you know, everybody's going to put together a Pro Bowl performance? I wouldn't necessarily go that far, Charlie, but I don't think it's a stretch to say, well, now, second year with all five players back to their same positions, which has not happened here for quite some time because of the game of musical chairs, that perhaps improvement will come with that. I don't think that's a stretch.
Yeah, I know. I agree. I think they'll be better, but it's just going to be how much better. But I got a couple of questions for you. Has, for one, has everybody reported? Two, when do they put people on PUP?
Well, I'm glad you asked that because I was just going to reveal Ben McAdoo is speaking to the media as I'm on the air here. He just announced three players are starting on PUP.
Well, let me guess.
Well,
one
right.
has got to be Mikal Thompson.
Wrong.
Right?
Okay.
Okay.
First one. Next try.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's see. It's got to be a linebacker, some linebacker. That's all right. Tell me.
You quit after
sure.
one wrong guess. You already quit. It's well, you were right. It is a linebacker. JT Thomas, he's dealing with a hamstring injury.
Yeah.
Then defensive tackle Jay Bromley, an ankle injury, and Damon Harrison, some knee swelling. So those three players.
Oh, no. Damon Harrison?
Damon Harrison is the third player on PUP.
He's the guy who's supposed to stop the run.
Well, but keep in mind, players start off on PUP, and then all of a sudden, a week or two into training camp, status changes. So this is the beginning. They haven't even taken the conditioning test. A number of teams have announced players that are going to start on PUP way too early, and I don't know anything about the severity. He just named, obviously, that those are the three players. That's it.
Yeah. That's surprising because I don't know, maybe you have, but I haven't heard any problem with snacks or injuries, concerns, or anything through this whole – you know, the OTAs and all that. And all of a sudden, like now, he's, you know, what did he do over the month?
Keep in mind this, and I don't want to speak out of line because I was not out there to hear exactly what Ben McAdoo said. I'm just looking at what I'm hearing in terms of some of the reporters and so forth. Sometimes players are put on PUP, Charlie, keep this in mind, as precautionary measures, which means, you know, they were nursing an injury during the course of OTAs. They had been nursing an injury during the course of while they were away from the team. And by next week, they could be up and running. That's why, you know, we tend to read a little too much into, oh, a player starts on PUP, that means something's, you know, all of a sudden up in the air. Remember, JT Thomas was one of the players that was held back a little bit during minicamp and OTA. So that's not necessarily a stunning surprise here. That's why I said sometimes these are just precautionary measures. They don't want to work these guys so hard at the start because obviously they don't want anything to revisit or come back to haunt them a little bit later on.
Yeah, totally understand. But like I said, I just didn't hear anything about any injury problems with snacks at all. It just surprises me. JT Thomas doesn't surprise me, actually. But Bromley, a little bit. But that's cool. Hey, Lance, have a great day. And,
you as well.
And enjoy the workout. Are you guys going to be interviewing any players in the next few days, you and John?
We'll probably speak to some players, absolutely, as they get into the flow. I mean, today really is a lot of conditioning testing, but starting tomorrow when they actually go out for their first practice, you'll see a lot of the guys a little bit more media savvy out in front as opposed to today. There's a lot of administrative things that need to take place because it's natural when guys report back to the facility for the first time. They actually have to make sure that, you know, the books are all set and according to plan as they get started for practicing.
All right, Lance, thank you.
You got it, Charlie. Appreciate the phone call. All right, let's try to squeeze in another caller or two before we wrap up shop. We got George and Trenton. George, what's happening?
Good, Lance. How are you?
I'm doing well, George. How's things with you?
What I was just wondering, of the draft picks with Eli Apple and Sterling, and how many of these guys do you project as being, if not starters, early, working into the rotation by the season opener?
Well, I think the top three that you just named, I would not be surprised if those three starting in week one have fairly big roles. I think Shepard certainly is going to be one of the top three wide receivers. Darian Thompson, when it's all said and done, and I believe this, I think he's going to be the starting safety next to Landon Collins. And Eli Apple is going to be part of the rotation of the top three corners. Whether or not we see him outside versus inside, I think that's going to determine how things develop with respect to training camp practices, and I would not rule out obviously Trevin Wade, who probably has more experience than anybody else on the roster as the nickel corner. But the top three, to answer your question, George, I would expect starting in week one, all three of them to have big roles. It's the other three draft picks, I think time will tell. B.J. Goodson, remember, there's a lot of depth at linebacker, so we'll have to see whether or not he can break through. His biggest impact to me will come on special teams. Paul Perkins, you have a lot of running backs in front of him. He also was not here for the majority of OTAs, so he has a little catch-up to do. And it depends on how many running backs they keep. And Jarrell Adams, too, has some competition at the tight end position. But the top three, the first three picks this year, I expect them in the early going to play some decent roles on this team.
Of the what you would think might be the maybe the early starting rotation at the wide receiver with Odell and Victor Cruz and Sterling, that's one of the better young receiving corps the Giants have had in a while, isn't it?
Well, on paper, I don't think anybody would complain. A lot is going to depend on can Victor Cruz get back to the level of play where he was before the injury. That remains to be seen. And, you know, don't rule out Dwayne Harris. Regardless of what happens with Victor Cruz, you know, Harris proved that he could be a reliable option in the receiving corps. So I think that Harris is still going to play a role depending on how they line up wide receivers, and he's an insurance policy depending on what plays out with Victor Cruz. But Harris I would include in that group because I don't think they're all of a sudden going to remove him from the equation.
Now, one thing I was interested, last year in the second half of the season, Will Tye, the kid from, what's he, Hofstra or Stony Point or somewhere, he got a lot of playing time. Does he look like he could contribute early on?
Well, Will Tye and Larry Dinnell are the main two returning tight ends who have by far the most experience on this team. Because if you look at some of the other tight ends, Adams is a rookie. Matt Lacoste joined the team late last season. He was on the practice squad a little bit before that. And then Ryan Malik's another young guy. So those two are obviously going to be the first guys up. I think they're going to get some competition from some of those young guys. But Tye proved, if you go back to late last year, George, he was the main guy because Dinnell got hurt, and he built some chemistry on the field with Eli Manning. So I think he proved already that he can run routes and be productive. I think where Will Tye needs to improve, and I think the coaching staff has said this as well as Will Tye, is you want to see him develop into an all-around tight end, a guy that could be just as efficient blocking as he is running routes and catching balls.
Oh, okay. All right. Thanks very much, Lance.
You got it, George. Appreciate the phone call.
Good luck. Take
you got
care.
It. You all too. Right. Appreciate the phone call. Before we wrap up the show, let's head back out to the lines. We got Christian in Virginia. Christian, what's happening?
Hey, how's it going, man?
Do well, Christian. Christian, if you could do me a favor, I'm hearing some feedback. If you just lower your radio or your computer,
it's off.
I should say. Okay,
it's off.
Awesome.
I gotcha.
Appreciate
it. Yeah, first of all, I don't know if you guys said it yet, but I guess the three pup guys are supposedly not said to be serious, according to McAdoo. So that's the first thing of good news.
Yeah.
You got to like, I don't know how anybody doesn't like Tyre or Donnell. But one thing I can think that a role that Donnell can carve out, and we need it, and we missed it when he was gone last year, is a bigger target in the red zone. And I think, it hasn't really been talked about enough. We have a lot of talent at receiver. You got to be excited about Shepard. You're optimistic about Cruz. Of course, Odell. But Eli's always had, like, big receivers, especially down there in the red zone. I think that's going to be an issue that they have to work out with this McAdoo offense. But the main thing I want to talk about is with Coughlin gone, there's a lot of guys I've always viewed that, he's been loyal to a fault almost sometimes. Guys that come to mind are Herzlick, which I think really has a legit shot to not be on the team anymore. Zach Diossi, coming back from injury. And then I know there's been a lot of praise for Andre Williams. Not very impressed. I don't know how any Giants fans can be. A lot of it's maybe he's miscast. Only had 88 carries last year. Kind of seems like a guy that needs the ball a lot to grind. Boston College, again, another tie to Coughlin. How do you see that shaking out? Like, how many running backs do you think we keep, and which ones do you think we keep as of today?
Well, I think they're going to keep probably four running backs, which is usually the number that they stick to. I think the fullback position could maybe change that. Do they say Will Johnson's going to be a tight end? And do they keep Nikita Whitlock? Does one of them make the roster? You know, so you could get maybe to five, depending on whether or not you want to factor in the fullback. But I think four is the safe number. If you go on what the previous rosters were made up of, and there's enough talent here to warrant them keeping four players, to me right now, Rashad Jennings and Shane Vereen, I think, are fairly safe. After that, I think that there's a lot of questions. And it also depends on, you know, does Paul Perkins make the 53 or do they try to put him on the practice squad? You know, that's another thing that you have to take into consideration. But remember, we have yet to see Paul Perkins on the field for a few weeks. He was here for minicamp, but that was 3 days.
He had the classroom stuff, didn't he? Also,
exactly. He did have the classroom. He spoke to running backs coach Craig Johnson. So he has had communication. I don't think he's behind in terms of the X's and O's, but now it's a matter of whether or not that's going to translate to the field. And until we see him on the field, it's way too early to make those assumptions. So all I could say right now, based on your question, Christian, is I think it's safe to say four running backs, at least four, will make the roster. Jennings and Vereen are the two safest.
Yeah.
Everybody else, I think it's going to be a battle royale and let the best man win.
Okay. Yep. I can definitely see that. One more thing before I let you guys go. We didn't draft any linemen on either side of the ball for the first time in forever. I do like our draft. I think Jerry Reese did a good job getting the value. I don't know if you guys heard about Leonard Floyd today. Also, he got carted.
He got carted. I did see that. But John Fox is going to give an update a little bit later on. So I would be, you know, jumping the gun if we say that he's out for the season.
For them.
Well, Kevin of course. Kevin White did get hurt. But once again, we don't know the severity of Leonard Floyd's injury right now. So it's way too early to tell.
Right. I will say I love when the couple callers ago was kind of moaning and groaning about the line. The first thing that I came to mind, you stole the words out of my mouth, was continuity and what that can really do for an offensive line. We've seen that back to the 07 Super Bowl years. Those guys never missed a game together. And I don't even know if individually they were as impressive as they were with the five. So you can't discount what that means. Do you think it's a fault of the Giants? And I know this has been a big topic. You guys have probably talked about it before. But do you think that they're being stubborn to a fault with their insistence on keeping Flowers at left tackle? And I'll take the rest off the air. Thanks, man.
Appreciate the phone call, Christian. They view Ereck Flowers as the future left tackle of this franchise. So I would not classify it as stubbornness, especially considering he played the bulk of last year with an ankle injury. So let's see him 100% for 15 or 16 games before perhaps everybody rushes judgment. And they drafted him high enough that you would expect him to be the future left tackle of this team. So I don't think it's a stretch. I don't think it's stubbornness. I think that they want to build continuity, using that word again, on the left side. And right now they got that. And they're set up for the future nicely because you have youth between Flowers, Pugh, and Richburg. So those three positions, you have young guys who you drafted in three of the last 4 years, who you obviously want to see play with one another for years to come, just like they built that previous regime of the offensive line. The right side, you don't have the same type of youth. There's no reason that perhaps they can't get to that level in future drafts or other undrafted free agents, but it's important that instead of early in a career, you move a guy around, that you say, hey, you know what? Flowers and Pugh have been together for 1 year. Now let's see what they could build upon that in year two. How many times have we seen, and this just goes beyond the offensive line, how many times have we seen quarterbacks work with different offensive coordinators and it stunts the development of a quarterback, like a Mark Sanchez or an Alex Smith? If you think about every year they switched offensive coordinators, it hurt them. When you move players around, when you change systems, it's never good for the development of a player. So right now they're trying to preach continuity. We're going to keep a guy in one position. We're not going to play a game of musical chairs. And this is going to be the centerpiece of what we're going to build around moving forward. I think most teams that have had success in building their offensive lines have been teams that don't juggle. And they stick to what the game plan is when they bring these guys in, and they hope that it comes to fruition. And right now on the left side of this Giants offensive line, you have youth, and you have a group that's played one season together. Now let's see what they can do in year two. I don't think that's a bad game plan at all. So that is going to wrap up today's program. Certainly appreciate everybody for tuning in as the players have reported back to camp. A few notes in terms of this program moving forward. Starting tomorrow, the program is going to start at 10 a.m. Eastern. To better help us with respect to players speaking to the media and so forth. So for the majority of training camp, from tomorrow all the way through right before the regular season starts, and we'll keep you posted as the show progresses, 10 a.m. Eastern is going to be the new start to Big Blue Kickoff Live. So just make sure you note that. We'll have reminders on the website, but that goes into effect tomorrow. right here on Giants.com. So that is important to note. We'll have continuous coverage all up on our website with respect to player interviews, the latest team news, coach interviews, and so forth, as well as highlights from practice. So stay locked to Giants.com for the next few weeks, because that is obviously the place that will have all of the latest. And we will have Big Blue Kickoff Live up and running each and every weekday, recapping and previewing all the latest news with respect to the team. But once again, it goes into effect 10 a.m. Eastern starting tomorrow. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Wish everybody a good rest of your Thursday. We'll speak to you tomorrow right here on Giants.com.